The Green Sun Show is brought to you by CEA Technology, a leader in building indoor growing systems that allow you to grow pesticide-free and conserve fertilizer, water, and energy to grow crops sustainably. Visit CEATECHN.com to learn more.
One or two? Do you see better with one, glasses, or two, LASIK surgery? I trust my eyes to the Northwest Indiana Eye and Laser Center, located in Valparaiso, Indiana. The state-of-the-art office and surgery center is the best in the region, providing complete eye care, including exams, glasses, and eye surgery. To make an appointment, call 219-464-8223. That's 219-464-8223. Or visit their website, nwindianaeyeandlaser.com. Trust your eye care to the best. And we thank the Northwest Indiana Eye and Laser Center for their support. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense, where we bring you sustainable innovations that are changing your world. The shipping container was a catalyst for globalization as it revolutionized transportation, making it more economical to build factories offshore with lower production costs and ship finished products to consumers all over the world. Several recent events have impacted the shipping industry, causing both governments and businesses to rethink globalization and the need to bring manufacturing back on shore. How will the supply chain change to accommodate an ever more complicated world? Here to unpack this issue is Lisa Anderson, a management and supply chain consultant and founder of LMA Consulting. Lisa, welcome to the Green Sense Show. I've been waiting to discuss this complex subject for a long time and appreciate you joining us.
Great. Glad to be here.
Let's start out with your favorite topic and mine, you. Let's talk a little bit about you and what makes you an expert in supply chain management, if you can give us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I started my career out of college in supply chain management. And so I started with Coca-Cola and planning what they produced in their West Coast facilities, and also supervising the distribution of product from the manufacturing facilities to the service centers to support customers. And then I went to a plastic injection molder and did other additional supply chain type of duties. And then after that, I actually went to a adult incontinence and food absorbent products manufacturer, you know, where I was the vice president of operations and supply chain. And so after my career in corporate life 18 years ago, I opened up LMA Consulting Group so that I could consult on the end-to-end supply chain and all the topics in between.
Well, it sounds like you have a wonderful background. You've dealt with lots of different products, so you've probably seen a lot of things in the supply chain world.
Absolutely, yeah. Seen pretty much everything you can imagine at this point. If anything, supply chain is always full of surprises and disruptions and challenges.
Well, let's put the supply chain in context and go back a little bit and give some history about how that cargo, the container, really transform the industry. So can you talk a little bit about how containers revolutionized shipping and how things were done in the past? I think about old 1940s movies where you saw the bananas and the nets being loaded into the ships, and yeah, that's probably a context.
That's funny. Well, you're right. I mean, container shipping has come a long way. The reason that container shipping itself is pretty fuel efficient and it's seen as sustainable. And actually that industry has made a lot of progress. They've put a lot of efforts into becoming sustainable is because if you think about it, the ships are really large. And so you can fit a lot of product volume wise on a container ship for multiple customers that are going to multiple places. And then of course they've spent a lot of time, money and effort, you know, going towards zero emissions, you know, et cetera. So there's been a lot of progress.
So talk a little bit about the economics. If you can give an example of cost per mile, ship by cargo ship versus maybe truck or rail. Do you have that data or
imagery? There's been some studies on it, and like the fuel efficiency container miles per gallon of a container ship is 78, whereas for a truck it's 6. So it's far less. But on the other hand, rail, and if you think about it, rail, of course, you know, they're longer. They're not like big like your container ship, but they're much longer. So they can hold a lot as well. And they've also been doing a lot to increase their fuel efficiency. So, and this was a study like from 2017. So like basically they were at 78, like I said, at container ships, but 65 in rail. So, you know, it's pretty close when it comes to rail, and they've been making a lot of improvements.
So let's talk a little bit about COVID. COVID disrupted the supply chain immensely. Everybody knows that. Have things normalized since COVID? Are they back to normal? What's the status of things after COVID?
I think that the real situation there is that it's not going to go back to normal. It has leveled out. Like the main really extreme volatilities that went on with COVID has normalized. However, nothing has gone back to normal, in quotes. So meaning that there's just a series of disruptions that are never ending at the moment. And it's not looking like, it's just our new normal, really, is that there's going to be something, whether it's weather related. Supply chains have become more complex. So the more geographies, the more geopolitical concerns, the more weather related concerns, the more like strikes and labor kind of concerns that go on. So with all of these types of disruptions, to some degree, once COVID shook it all up, it's gone back to leveled off and like somewhat normalized, but it's not going to go back to normal.
One of the things I'm seeing in lots of different places is because of COVID, there's been a lot of gouging and a lot of companies are profiting. Is there gouging and excessive profiting in the shipping industry due to COVID?
You know, the rates have really leveled out and have gone back to, to normal levels, like normal again in quotes, but normal levels, given inflationary times that we live in, the rates have really gone back. However, as these disruptions and other things happen, there are fees that get added into the equation. And it is a bit of a catch-22, and you could argue both sides of that equation.
The Ukraine war, how has that impacted the supply chain?
It impacted the supply chain, but not as much as some of the other things going on. It impacted, though, the end-to-end supply chain. And what I mean by that is that anything that was supplied by the Ukraine region, which generally speaking was for like food for, you know, not necessarily to the US, although some, but not a lot. And metals, commodities, that's supplied to the whole world. So it has affected certain industries quite a lot. Like, for example, like even aerospace, there's been a lot of aerospace shortages and disruptions going on since COVID. And it literally just started to like level out, normalize, if you will, before all the Boeing issues came up, but like by the end of last year. And some of those issues relate back to the metals, commodities, et cetera, that came from the Ukraine region. Also, they had the oil supply in Russia was cut off to Europe because of the sanctions. And so really what happened is the supply just changed because instead of selling it to Europe, they started selling it to China and India.
Well, let's get into something a little closer to home, and that's the Panama Canal. Tell us, what's the physical issue with the Panama Canal?
In Panama, they're experiencing a drought. The Panama Canal is powered by the runoff, the rainwater. And so really what that means is we were talking about those really big ships before. Well, they've put limitations on the size of the size of the ship and or the cargo. So what you could maybe do is offload, I don't know, I'll make up this number, but you offload 20% of your cargo and put it on a train or put it on a truck and then take it to the other end of the Panama Canal because you can't pass with that much weight in the ship because there's just not enough water to make the whole thing work. Or you could just go light. So there's ships that are just like going partially empty that go through the Panama Canal. And so there's different like those restrictions, but then there's also restrictions on how many ships can pass through because they simply can't have as many ships passing through, somewhat because, you know, you have these extra like processes they have to go through. So really over time, there's been different rules and requirements, but generally speaking, about 50% of the capacity had been reduced in the Panama Canal. So meaning that 50% less ships got through or they were delayed.
Yeah, and just to clarify, the physical issue is the Panama Canal has a change in elevation. It starts at sea level on both ends, and through a series of locks, the ships get raised to a peak where there is a man-made lake that fills the locks. And then on the other side, it starts to decline in elevation back to sea level. And that's been the problem is due to climate change, they've had a heavy drought. The lake has not been filling up, so they can't get the capacity through. Well, we talked about gouging, and I could see your point here is if I have 50% less cargo going through, you know, and I still have the same demand, something's got to happen to pricing. And I
here's
can't
where
imagine...
gouging could be said is true. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Rob.
No, I mean, I could see the complication. If I had to offload 20% of my cargo and take it by rail to the other end, that's got to be very expensive and time
it
consuming.
Is. Or you just go light, right? Because then you can at least go faster. And
but if you
but
go
then
light,
going light
then
means every product costs more, right? So the Panama Canal was charging pretty significant rates if you wanted to expedite your load. Now, I could argue on the side of like, you know, is that price gouging? But on the other hand, it's costing way more.
And if you have perishable goods, you could see how much of a mess this has created. Well, let's move on to the other one. That's the Suez Canal. You mentioned that.
Yep.
And there were problems with geopolitical issues and wars with Houthi rebels bombing ships. Give us an update on that.
Ships were diverted to the Suez Canal from the Panama Canal because that issue occurred first. And the Suez Canal is also used to supply Europe. But the Houthi rebels started attacking any container ships that or any ships that they thought were sympathetic to Israel. So basically, ships just started getting attacked. And they couldn't count on safe passage. So then what's happening is, of course, the owners of these, you know, of the, you know, shipping companies said, well, I can't take this kind of a risk. Somebody could die. Sometimes they would start to go through because they thought it was going to be safe and then found out it wasn't. And then they had to turn around or they had to wait until they thought it was going to be safe passage. So there was like a lot of delays and complications. But what they did also is just start diverting shipments. And so what that meant is you would divert the shipment from Asia generally to around the southern tip of Africa. But that added significant miles. There's the lowest number could be 2,000 nautical miles, but it's up to 10,000 nautical miles. It depends on your like route and all sorts of things. But generally speaking, the trip around the southern tip of Africa adds 10 days to any trip, as well as these miles. And it's adding cost because anytime all the crew, the inventory is just going to be sitting unproductive for another 10 days, there's capital costs on that. So, and then the ships, like, because if all these ships have to be diverted for another 10 days, it means you need more ships to carry the same amount of goods. So now you may need additional ships. And of course, for all these extra miles, you need additional fuel. And now the West Coast ports are becoming popular again. So they're going from Asia to the West Coast ports, LA and Long Beach, and then they could rail them across the US.
Well, let's get to another issue to further complicate things. Recently, there was a large cargo ship that hit the bridge in Baltimore. Baltimore is somewhat of a dead port because you have to go way up the Chesapeake Bay. But still, there is activity there. How has that impacted things?
Well, it's definitely it's yet another disruption, right? So it's made the trip from the if you're going from northeast Asia to the East Coast, and you got the Panama Canal, you went to the Suez Canal. You might be thinking probably the West Coast ports is better because now you're like a little gun shy. But it definitely affects the Baltimore region the most because there's infrastructure in that area that's geared to handling the port traffic. And that particular port is very experienced in roll-on, roll-off products, which is like automobiles, light trucks, farm equipment, construction equipment. So it specializes in it, and it's like the number one port for that type of thing. So of course, it's not just simple to like divert those types of ships. So it's going to require more, again, inflationary pressures because it's more cost. You may have to, like, even for something that's not in that product grouping, because it also, like, for example, like does sugar, and it does things for like Home Depot, you know, Amazon, those kinds of folks too. But basically those types of shipments will have to be diverted. The more regular shipments will be diverted to like New Jersey, Virginia, other ports like that. And then it means, though, some of it, if not all of it, will have to be trucked up towards Baltimore, because remember, you have infrastructure set up to handle what's coming in, or you'll have to use different, like warehouses, different, you know, it depends, but there's different like logistics infrastructure set up. So anyway, that's basically a, you're adding definitely miles, cost, et cetera, time. So there's a lot of congestion too, because near term, there's a lot of congestion and the port is no longer open because it's been cut off because of the bridge collapse. So they are desperately trying to remove the debris so that we can at least get the port open, even though you'll have to divert traffic around the bridge, which also is not terribly sustainable.
Is this an outlier, or is this usual to have this many complications happen at once?
Well, it's definitely an outlier. However, it's also like it's a catch-22 to answer that question, because I think what it is really the new normal we're in. One would hope that a container ship running into the bridge is an outlier, right? That specific situation is unlikely to happen again, or at least anytime soon. However, what I'm saying is that there's some other situation that, like, you know, has some likelihood of happening. So some sort of a disruption impacting the global supply chain is likely. A ship running specifically into a bridge and making it collapse, unlikely. So, but the problem here is that these types of disruptions are going to continue to happen. Like if we went back to after COVID, but before this new series of problems, the ship got stuck in the Suez Canal. Right. So, and that caused a choke point. Ships couldn't get by. If you think about it, of course, they were having to go around the southern tip of Africa, et cetera, et cetera. So there's always something happening, but it's just how many and how big of a choke point is it?
Well, I imagine that people in the supply chain industry must be fatigued. Are people rethinking globalization? And is there a push to bring things back on shore to make life simpler?
Definitely. Reshoring is gaining momentum for sure. And so is nearshoring. So basically regional shoring is really what's happening. So basically you're expanding your regional footprint. So you produce in America for America, and that could be North America, South America, maybe as a region, produce in Asia for Asia, produce in Europe for Europe. That's gaining a lot of momentum. And it is going to be inflationary, at least in the beginning, because although the costs have come in alignment really between Asia and even the US, if you add all the costs up for non-commodity products, you have to invest up front in, you know, equipment, machinery, people. Like those are upfront investments that pay off over time. But, you know, obviously you minimize your distance that you go. Whatever the mode of operation, it's going to be better from a sustainability point of view.
So we talked a little bit about strategies. Are there any technologies or innovations that are being developed to better manage the supply chain?
From a manufacturing standpoint, you know, there's more and more focus on 3D printing, which is also like referred to as additive manufacturing, so that you can print on demand, which allows you to do more of a regional manufacturing structure. And I would say that, like, overall in the supply chain, there's a lot of advanced technologies to track what's in the supply chain to optimize. Like, I would say maybe one that's interesting because it's like more current, because like I could go on and on, but well, blockchains come up a lot, but that's more about like tracking and being able to see, you know, where things are and what the, you know, who's like, affected them and what the costs are, but is artificial intelligence. And that would be more predictive. Like, so what do we need? Where do we need it? How do we reduce our footprint? How do we maximize what goes on a container ship or a truck or a rail or whatever? How do we reduce the waste in manufacturing so that we can be more sustainable and we can support, really in the end, what we're trying to do is get customers what they need when they need it in the most profitable way and the most sustainable way as we can.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Green Sense Show and unpacking this complex subject.
Excellent. Glad to be here.
My guest this week was Lisa Anderson, supply chain consultant and founder of LMA Consultants, giving solutions for managing the complex, ever-changing global supply chain. I'm Robert Colangelo. Thank you for listening to the Green Sense Show. Two very special people make it possible. A big thanks goes to Angela Surdy, our scheduler for booking guests, and Margaret Larkin, our audio producer and social media coordinator, for getting the show out. If you listen to the radio, check out the Green Sense Minute every Thursday and Saturday on 105.9 FM, WBBM, Chicago.
The Green Sense Show is brought to you by CEA Technology, a leader in building indoor growing systems that allow you to grow pesticide-free and conserve fertilizer, water, and energy to grow crops sustainably. Visit CEATECHN.com to learn more.